From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been 1 year to the day since cash bail was eliminated in Illinois. The law that allowed this change is called the Pretrial Fairness Act. And up to the moment of its implementation, this proved to be controversial, something we covered extensively here on The 21st Show. Part of that controversy came from a concerted push by Republicans to make this an issue in the general election 2 years ago.
Talk about how the property taxes are going to increase drastically when this goes in effect, because that money that's coming in right now for cash bail, that supports the system. The people mm-hmm. are working, processing these criminals, and without this cash bail, they're either going to be let go or property taxes are going to have to increase.
The Safety Act is designed to keep murderers and domestic abusers, violent criminals in jail. And to address that, the problem of the current system, which allows those people, murderers, domestic abusers, and so on, to buy their way out of jail by just paying bail.
Now the cash bail has been gone for a year, we're checking in with people who are close to the law or studying its consequences. Sharon Mitchell is the chief public defender for Cook County. Defender Mitchell, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is Amadou Drame, director of the Illinois Justice Project. Amadou, welcome to the show to you as well.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And we're also joined by David Olson, professor of criminal justice and criminology and co-director of the Center for Criminal Justice at Loyola University Chicago. David, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Brian.
I want to note, we did invite to our conversation today people and groups who have opposed this change in Illinois law, including several states' attorneys' offices, as well as the Illinois Sheriff's Association. They all either declined or did not respond to our invitations. But you can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What questions do you have about the end of cash bail in Illinois? Was it the right move? And especially if you happen to work in criminal justice, how has it changed your work? 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Amadou Drame with the Illinois Justice Project. I want to begin with you. Can you briefly remind us what the Pretrial Fairness Act is and what exactly changed 1 year ago today?
Certainly. Again, thank you for having me. So the pretrial fairness provisions in the Safety Act eliminated the use of cash bail as a determining factor as to whether or not an individual is able to be released prior to during the pretrial process of their, before one goes through court and what have you, the entire court process. And in addition to that, there were a number of reforms that took place with respect to the process itself, specifically needing state's attorneys to, instead of allowing, forgive me, a little bit of word salad here, as opposed to having judges simply determine whether or not an individual can be detained or released during pretrial, changed the process there, requiring now state's attorneys to actually file a petition in order to effectuate that process. So that is another important aspect of that as well. There were a number of offenses that either became detainable offenses or offenses that were not detainable offenses by way of this process and changes in the law as well.
So it's no longer about money. It's not that you had to come up with $10,000 on a $100,000 bail to get out, even if you were, accused of some heinous crime. It's really about the type of crime and what sort of threat the person would potentially present to the community, I guess. Is that a pretty fair summary, would you say?
Yes.
All right, David Olson from Loyola University, I want to bring you into the conversation because you've been following the end of cash bail all year. There's a lot of ways we can go with this. We can talk about the crime rate, failure to appear rate, which is whether people actually show up for their court dates and other factors. But maybe we can just take these item by item, kind of quick hit style. My first question is, what happened to the jail population since this change?
The research we're doing, we've been looking at the pretrial practices in Illinois for the last couple of years. So we were looking at things prior to the implementation of the law to become aware of and document the practices before the law. And now that the law has gone into place, we're looking at what's changing since then. With respect to jail populations, what we've seen is in broad terms, jail populations are down a bit from the time period before the law to after the law. It seems as though in urban counties and in Cook County in particular, the jail population in those regions are down about 14%. In rural communities, the jail populations are down a bit more. They're down around 25%. So jail populations are down. They're not down to zero, as many people were predicting. But it's not universal either. There are some counties where the jail populations have actually increased since the law went into effect. But broadly speaking, jail populations are down.
And
a lot of that is the fact that there's individuals that aren't staying for the short periods of time that they previously were. So as Amadou described, there's individuals that cannot be detained under the law. And based on the research we did before the law went into effect, most of those individuals, while detained, they spent less than a week in jail until someone could post the money. Now they're really only spending a day or two at the most, and that's part of the reason for the drop.
What about that? What's called the failure to appear rate? The idea, the idea with cash bonds, some people would say was, well, it's an incentive to get people to show up so they can get their money back eventually.
Right. That was the assumption of a lot of people in interviews we did with individuals going through the pretrial process. They didn't necessarily see it that way. They oftentimes weren't the ones that posted the money. It was friends and family members that posted the money. And they were also under no illusion that they'd be receiving any of that money back at the end of their case. Research that we've done in the Illinois Supreme Court's pretrial task force found that the majority of the bond money that was collected was not returned to the defendant. It was kept as part of it was kept for a processing fee. Part of it was used to satisfy any fines or fees that might have been imposed on the defendant, which can still be imposed. It's just the bond money isn't necessarily a source of that money. In terms of failure to appear, we've got some preliminary analyses that we've done that suggest that the rates of failure to appear have not changed since before the law. We're finding kind of in regions of the state, it's somewhere around 15% of people are failing to appear, meaning they missed a court date and the judge issued a warrant for them to be located and brought to court. That was about what we saw prior to the law going into effect. The one caveat is we're still relatively new into the law, and there's a lot of cases that were filed under the new law that still have not reached disposition. So it's important to keep tracking cases and make sure that we measure the full outcome of the cases.
Yeah, that's right. There's currently a case pending at maybe multiple cases pending at the Illinois Supreme Court on this. Last question, then I want to pivot to Defender Sherrone Mitchell. But has crime gone up, David?
The research we've done and looked at has found that crime has not gone up. Again, statewide or in the urban areas or in the rural communities. So broadly speaking, crime has not gone up. And we're not arguing that the law reduced crime. We're simply pointing out that many people believe that crime has gone up. If we look objectively at crimes reported to the police in Illinois, we haven't seen that. Again, there's some counties that have seen increases in crime. There's some counties that have seen dramatic decreases in crime. The ability to explain changes in crime as a result of a single policy are extremely complicated, but at least we're not seeing any kind of increase system-wide.
Yes, it's complicated, I think, is a good summary of the conversations you and I have been having for more than a decade now. All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. It's been 1 year since the Pretrial Fairness Act provisions went into effect, eliminating cash bail in Illinois. We're talking about that with Amadou Drame, who's the director of the Illinois Justice Project, David Olson, who's a professor of criminal justice and criminology at Loyola University in Chicago, and Sherrone Mitchell, the chief public defender of Cook County, Illinois. And Defender Mitchell, I want to bring you into the conversation now. this, your office, public defender offices, are very much involved in the sort of early stage litigation of these detention hearings. Talk about how your work has changed over the past year.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me again. You know, the decision about whether somebody is going to remain in custody before, during the pendency of their case, or be released was always a part of the equation, both before the Pretrial Fairness Act and after the Pretrial Fairness Act. And, you know, I think the construction of the law, I think most simply basically says, this is a really important decision. We need to get as much as possible, much information as possible at the onset to make this determination. So we've really had to kind of change our focus to be prepared to have those discussions early on in the case, 40, 48 hours after a person is arrested and goes before a judge. So, you know, most of our work has really been about restructuring that process. Before the Pretrial Fairness Act, those discussions happen, but, you know, they happen sometimes in a longer time frame, or a deep conversation or did not happen until much farther along in the case.
Has that been a resource challenge for you? Do you have the people to be able to adapt to that, or is it just a workflow change?
You know, I think the public defense has been historically underfunded. And the Pretrial Fairness Act did not create a problem in resources to public defenders. It certainly brought more attention to the issue. So I think that we are happy to have a discussion about how the state supports public defenders. But, you know, I would make the argument that the Pretrial Fairness Act created some problem. I think the reality of the situation is the problems existed for decades, and the Pretrial Fairness Act has brought more light to the issue of lack of access to counsel really across the entire state.
Amadou Drame, I want to ask you, we heard a little earlier David mentioned that jail populations are down, but not as significantly as might have been expected. What do you think of that?
I think that it's still a little early to reach any sweeping conclusions. We're 1 year into implementation. Quite frequently, we see some people's pretrial processes and experiences extend well beyond a year. And so I do want to give a nod to the fact that there's a degree to which we still have some ways to go. Having said that, I think that is very promising and encouraging. I do take the fact that crime has not increased and that jail populations are where they are, as you said, as a very positive sign, in the sense that, you know, there was a lot of fear mongering that kind of came into this prior to the implementation of this legislative change. And the fact that implementation, by all accounts, has gone smooth is a very positive thing. As public defender Mitchell mentioned earlier, there were a lot of negative consequences that were associated with the old way of doing things. There were some negative consequences, particularly the way in which our old system extracted wealth from communities. And I would say, as one measure of success, is that we can say confidently that there are at least $100 million in bond money that would have previously been extracted from our state's most marginalized communities that were not. And so, again, I think it's still TBD in some respects, but with respect to implementation and the fact that there has been no negative consequence on the way that crime is going, I take that as a positive sign, because we eliminated a negative consequence of the old system for sure. And the new system seems to be working just fine.
We need to take a break in another minute or so, but I want to drill down on something you just said there, because one of the arguments for this change was to increase equity for people who are Black and Latino or from a lower income background. And you mentioned $100 million. Talk about that figure and whether you feel like Illinois is moving in the goal or moving in the direction of meeting that goal, I should say.
Well, yeah, I think we certainly are. I think that it's a positive step. You know, in other forums, in other conversations about this topic as well, I know that it's been an important point to raise that, you know, when you look at, especially in Black and brown communities, who's actually paying bail, was paying bail, it very frequently wasn't the person who was actually going through the pretrial process who had been arrested and detained. It was mothers, it was aunts, it was grandmothers, frequently Black women, other relatives who were, you know, in a position where they had to pay for these things. People also lost jobs as a result of being detained pretrial, even though the outcome of their cases might not have necessarily warranted that had they been adjudicated and they've been afforded an opportunity to not sit behind bars throughout that process. And so the criminal legal system doesn't exist in isolation, nor do other people exist in solely within the context of the criminal legal system. People have lives, people have jobs. And yes, when people make mistakes, they should have to answer for those things. But it's not always the case that the punishment means that they have to lose their jobs, their house, and things of that nature. And so to the extent that we can have a just system that administers justice without having those negative consequences as well, I think is always a win for equity. As you mentioned, it frequently was the case.
We'll tell you what, let's pause there. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're on a fixed clock on our program, and so we do need to take a break. We will continue this conversation with Amadou Drame, Sharon Mitchell, and David Olson on 1 year since Illinois eliminated cash bail. Join us, 800-222-9455. We'll be back in 90 seconds. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about the past year of no cash bail in Illinois. Today, September 18th, marks exactly 1 year since that change went into effect. Let's hear the perspective of a judge. This is Chief Judge Andrew Gleason from Illinois' 20th Circuit, St. Clair County, in the Metro East.
The idea that we are assessing that level of danger to the community at large and or to any individual person before we allow someone to be out on bail is, I think the counter argument's probably correct. We're safer under this present system. And then and probably just as important is now we are upholding our obligations to the Constitution of the United States and the rights of us as individual citizens in this country.
Thank you to Will Bauer over at KWMU for sharing that tape. We're talking about this with experts and officials who have direct knowledge of this change. Sharon Mitchell is the public defender in Cook County. Amadou Drame is director of the Illinois Justice Project. And David Olson is a professor of criminal justice and criminology at Loyola University, Chicago. I do want to mention again, we invited groups with other perspectives on this change, including state's attorney's offices, the Illinois Sheriff's Association. They either declined or did not respond. You can join us, though, at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Public Defender Sharon Mitchell, I want to come back to you. I imagine things are different in different parts of the state. Cook County is its own thing. It's the largest unified court system in the country, I believe. We have heard, though, from several downstate public defenders who have been frustrated with the new system. And here is some tape from Elizabeth Pollock, who's the public defender for Champaign County, speaking with our public radio colleague Mawa Iqbal, talking about incentivizing public defenders to work in downstate Illinois.
There needs to be a wholehearted investment in this system. Otherwise, we're just telling the people that we represent that they're not important enough to matter.
So talk about that. Do you find, I mean, you said earlier that you didn't think that this particular change in law was putting stress or additional stress or how would I say it, changing the question of resources for the public defender's office. But talk about that. Do you find that the changes need to be made here?
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely. I know Defender Pollock pretty well. If you ask her, do you think that you had a well-resourced public defender's office with everything that you needed before the Pretrial Fairness Act, she would say no. She would say that the state needs to make a more serious investment in public defense. So I think there has been this idea that the pretrial Fairness Act created that problem. And the reality of the situation is that that's not the case. And there has been lots of conversation both in the state and outside of the state about thinking about how we can move from a model where counties are essentially paying very, very little compared to kind of the support that prosecution and law enforcement gets to ensure that people have the constitutional rights protected, that they have an attorney that has the capacity to represent folks. So, like I said before, my position is I don't think the Pretrial Fairness Act created this problem. This is a problem that existed for quite a bit of time. And quite frankly, you shouldn't take my word for it. There have been kind of lots of studies on the issue that, predate the Pretrial Fairness Act that talk about the issues that have existed with the way we fund public defenders and the access poor folks have to counsel that has the ability to do the job.
You're reminding me, I've meant for years now to revisit since the Capital Litigation Trust Fund ended when Illinois eliminated capital punishment, the idea of defendants facing the most serious charges being far less resource than they were before is maybe a topic for another show. But yes, to yeah. Your point, I'm going to do drama. I want to play another soundbite and sort of going bigger picture about some of the opposition to this law in the last couple of years in Illinois. And this is from Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. She was speaking in an event for reporters last week, giving her candid feelings on how political campaigns and others attacked this change in Illinois law.
They're the lies that we're told. And so this universal, like, oh my gosh, this did not burn down like Darren Bailey said it would, because Darren Bailey somehow was credible in these conversations. I just feel compelled in my time left in office to say truths that need to be spoken. It was racist. It was racist.
And just to be clear, she's talking there about the sort of political opposition to this change. And thank you to friend of the show, Amanda Vinicky, for sharing that tape. Amadou, what do you think of that?
Say the data about implementation is pretty incontrovertible. It is what it is. To the extent that there were individuals who attempted to use, the same old tactics of fear and race baiting and things of that nature to scare people into being afraid of change to this system. I think that, as we look back at what took place, I think that that certainly deserves its fair share of scrutiny, understanding, and hopefully, we can reach some strong understandings there. Having said that, what I do appreciate about what we've been able to do is that we were able to lead with courage. It took courage for the General Assembly and the governor and all the tireless hours that advocates put into bringing about change to make this thing possible. And what I also appreciate about the fact that we're now here able to have this conversation, given all that has happened in the past, some of which you just played audio about, is that this successful implementation, I think, demonstrates that we can follow data, research, and lead with our own values to bring about more safety in our communities, but also to have a more just system that doesn't punish people because of the communities or zip codes that they come from, that doesn't punish people because they have a limited amount of wealth, but that instead really looks to the facts and looks to the nature and circumstances of each individual case and reach a conclusion. I think that is a positive thing. And then I'd say finally, I also think that this should also send a strong signal, strong message to the public that those of us who are advocating for changes to the criminal legal system are credible, that the ideas that we bring to bear certainly deserve scrutiny, that they should be evaluated, as Professor Olson mentioned, but that we can follow rigor, we can follow data, and we can follow best practices to bring about more safety. And we don't have to rely on messages that have been signaled by some of the same old familiar faces that we've heard, you know, more tough on crime stances from in the past, simply because that's what we've always known. We can do better. We deserve better, and we should do it.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah, sure. Sure, Mitchell. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think that, listen, you had people who carry very high titles, who are very deep into this work with a full voice, essentially say that the Pretrial Fairness Act would signal the destruction of the criminal legal system as we know it. You played a clip talking about the explosion of taxes. People talked about how nobody would come to court. People talked about how this would lead to the purge. This is not a perfect law. We still need to continue to study its effects. But we can with full confidence say that many of the predictions from people that we should trust and should have kind of a real great perspective on this were completely wrong. So the question we have to ask ourselves now, were those predictions just based on politics, or were those predictions based on assumptions that were not rooted in the law, or did those folks just do a really bad job of prognosticating what happened? And again, I don't want to act as if like this law is perfect, but I do want to make it very clear that predictions that came from folks that we would expect to be far more on the mark were completely and utterly wrong. And quite frankly, I think it's a real, kind of dealing with a crisis, right? Of legitimacy with some folks, right? Were we being lied? Were people just so wrong? Or were people just lying for political gain? It's an interesting question for us to explore in the next couple of years.
Well, and something I think that's related to that, David Olson, I want to bring you back in because you mentioned this earlier. We did see crime go up during the pandemic. It's come down since then, but there are still people out there who feel like crime is higher. What do we understand about that sort of dichotomy, that mindset?
It's something that's been well documented, that the public perception of levels of crime is rarely consistent with objective measures of it. And I'm always reminded and make the point that what people perceive is important and what people feel is important. So if they feel as though they're not as safe, telling them they are safer doesn't necessarily appease that. I think part of it is the constant exposure we have as a society to horrific crimes that occur across the country, the constant reminder that there are serious crimes that occur can diminish any kind of objective assessment that, you know, there's less crime this year than there was last year. For most people, they just don't perceive that. And again, part of it is the messages they hear, what they're exposed to. But that's why we wanted to at least put out there, you know, based on our research, that crime has not gone up. Because I think most people's assumptions are, well, the jail populations are down, that's why crime has gone up. Well, that isn't the case. The jail populations have gone down, but crime hasn't gone up. Crime has gone down.
You know, go ahead.
And I think Professor Olson is completely correct there. You know, I think the point that advocates make is not that crime does not exist, right? Crime does exist, and it is too high. Right. But let's be very clear about what the arguments that were being made is that this change would lead to an explosion of crime. Right. And that is very different than the existence of crime, which has existed for, you know, obviously a period of time that's uncomfortable for folks. Right. But I think we really need to go back and think about what we were told would happen and interrogate why those predictions were so wrong.
Well, in the time we have remaining, which is less than 5 minutes, I want to put this change in the context of what's came before. And Amadou, I think you mentioned this a few minutes ago, that Illinois has really been on a long-term trajectory to try and put more justice into the criminal justice system, you might say. And we've seen a significant drop in the prison population in the last decade. That's post-trial, not pre-trial, like what we've been talking about. But do you see that as linked? Talk about the broader context of what's been happening with crime and punishment in Illinois.
Certainly, and thank you for the question. I think, you know, broadly speaking, and I might be a bit more opinionated than my colleagues in this respect, but I would say that the same old tired approaches of being tough on crime simply have not made us safer. We have had a structure, you alluded to the decline in our prison population. We have some of the harshest, strongest, toughest gun laws in the country. We have been tough on crime in many respects. We eliminated the use of parole. Despite all of that, we still have a prison population that over the last decade has declined by 40%. We've seen declines in our jail population, has already been documented here. And still, as you also pointed out, people do not feel safer. And people sometimes feel like crime is going up when statistically speaking, it is going down. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that in some instances where crime is occurring in certain parts of our state and in our country has changed, whereas it used to be confined to smaller neighborhoods or some neighborhoods. We see it now in places where it hadn't previously been. But having said all of that, what I take some joy in is the fact that there are other approaches, other alternatives to the old ways that we've been doing things, addressing those real root causes that lead people to be involved with the criminal legal system, addressing issues like poverty, addressing issues like homelessness and the huge number of people who experience it, and the increased likelihood of being impoverished or being homeless or being someone who struggles with mental health issues, and the increased likelihood of you being involved with the criminal legal system. We've seen an explosion, I would say, of the number of programs, initiatives that are attempting to divert, deflect people away from the system, support people who are coming out of the system after they paid their debt to society. And on the whole, I think those things are working. We've seen reduced recidivism. We're seeing better interventions that target people and really address those root causes. And I think that that's a positive thing. And to me, that's a sign that we should be doubling down on those types of approaches.
Sharon Mitchell, just about a minute left in our time together. You've been following this issue. You were also an advocate before you were Cook County Public Defender. How have you seen the trajectory here, and where do you think it's going?
I think that we've seen, I think, some really exciting moves. I think that for me, many people talk about crime, they talk about harm in terms of like who's locked up and who's not locked up. And what I'm excited about is that there is a more complicated evaluation, right? Because no matter where you are, whether you're a prosecutor, a defense attorney, an advocate, no matter where your political spectrum is, I just haven't met anybody who is pro-crime, right? Who wants more crime, right? I think everybody's trying to figure out how do we make ourselves a safer place. And I'm glad that we are moving toward a world where I think we're trying to be more effective when it comes to that, and not just being focusing on like responses to crime, but how do we stop it in the first place? So I'm really excited about that conversation, as everybody should who lives in this state, right? Because we all want to live in a world where it's safer, right? People could have the freedom to live their lives, and hopefully we continue down that path because we have a long way to go.
Sharon Mitchell is the public defender of Cook County. Amadou Drame is director of the Illinois Justice Project. And Professor David Olson is from Loyola University, Chicago. Thank you all so much for being with us, sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us.